Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where I chat to authors, broadcasters, celebs and campaigners about their life, their work, their influences and their mantras, and the adversity they've overcome in their life. By hearing others' inspiring stories, it can sometimes help us change our mindsets, our day or even our lives, and I have loved meeting so many incredible and inspiring women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Zara Janjua. Thank you so much for your time, Zara.
Thanks for having me, Nikki.
Pleasure. I love that Scottish accent already. So Zara Janjua is a multi-award-winning broadcaster and voice on the radio and podcasts, and also a successful journalist, presenter, producer, director, filmmaker, writer, comedian, actor and host, including panels and debates on the Times Radio, BBC Asian Network, BBC Radio London, and appearing on BBC, ITV, and STV. I mean, goodness me, Zara, you do it all. And
thank
that
you.
Lineup is just incredible.
What a great intro.
What a great intro, isn't it? Well, gosh, what a great life. I'm really looking forward to this. Now, how do you stay so energetic and do all of that? You wear so many hats, don't you?
I have lots of sleep. I am a big fan of sleep. I know that there's entrepreneurs out there that like to get up at sort of 5 o'clock in the morning and get going really early. And obviously lots of people juggling kids as well. I don't have any of that. And I am not a 5 a.m.er. I like a lot of sleep and, you know, I prioritize my sleep. So I feel like when I get going, that's, you know, I can go all day.
Wow, you are so energetic. You work on so many creative projects. Any sort of life hack tips on juggling those creative projects?
I think you just have to get them done. We often put our own barriers in place or put barriers in our place when we're thinking about what we want to do, or we limit how much we think we're capable of. And I really like having a diverse portfolio with lots of variety in it, because it keeps me really energized and it does keep me feeling like I come into everything new and fresh each time. So in any one day, I'll maybe be working on, you know, 4 to 5 different projects. And
amazing.
I think that it's lovely to have that. The passion,
yes.
I think, more over than anything else, that's what drives me. And I think if you have passion for what you do, then nothing ever seems like work, which I need to say very carefully because I do have fee-paying clients.
Of course, listening clients, and obviously we'll give them a shout out. But looking at your website, I mean, I'm just in awe of it. I mean, most of us have stopped in our tracks and had a really boring lockdown, but you've actually managed to achieve accolades and awards after awards after what? Your 2021 has just been incredible, hasn't it? Mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. But it was sort of through necessity, Nikki, because I had been working full-time. And I, for years, had been considering going self-employed and becoming self-employed and working as a freelancer. But the opportunity had not arisen. And I decided to go full-time self-employed about 3 months before the pandemic hit.
Wow.
And I took, yeah, I know, what a great decision. I made the choice to spend about 6 weeks of that time, the 3 months before the pandemic hit, going out to Nepal to make a documentary about marginalized and disabled women in Kathmandu. And it was an opportunity that came to me because my background is human rights journalism, but I've now become a filmmaker and it's one of the things that I do. And I wanted to work on a 50-50 basis. So I wanted to dedicate half my time to working on philanthropy and projects that would fulfill that need that I have in life. And so I decided to go and do this. It was, you know, my first philanthropic filming project, and came back and I was editing it, directing it, and obviously I'd been filming it out there. So, yeah, it was my surprise that I came home and all my fee-paying work was canned.
It was there waiting for you. I saw that film actually and it was beautiful. The, you know, the cinematography was beautiful. The music was beautiful, wasn't it? The women and their stories. And it was really uplifting. And actually being a freelancer, you know, looking at some of your awards I've got here, you know, Freelancer of the Year Award 2021, Women of the Future Award 2021, ITV Comedy, BBC Children's New Voice Indie Mentorship 2021. I mean, wow,
I've been cracking
had a
on.
Lockdown to be proud of, haven't you? One that you will look back on in joy, and a lot of us will feel the complete opposite potentially.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm always very sensitive to the experiences of people who have lost loved ones or who've had really challenging and very difficult times. And I think that being alone, you know, being young, free and single, and, you know, thankfully my family were very safe and healthy throughout. So I felt very, very blessed for those reasons. But I have a huge amount of resilience inside me for when things go wrong. I actually kind of like it when things don't go to plan, because I think that's when you get creative. Yeah, it's when you get creative.
To find the joy in the madness, because I think we've really had to dig deep, haven't we? And being single, you know, it's been lonely, you know, in terms of for lots of people. But you've been commended as one of Britain's most talented up-and-coming women as well, and just accolade after accolade, which you must be so proud.
I mean, I am, but, you know, I think the thing is, Nikki, that often people say to you, oh, you're doing so much, because they see this stuff, and it's nothing for me has really, really happened yet.
And really? I think it's all still ahead of you,
because you've just started this amazing business. Yeah,
but I feel like it's all still to come, and I've been building, and actually that year in lockdown especially, I just felt like I need to make things happen, because all of a sudden I've come back from Nepal, I've spent 6 weeks unpaid doing this wonderful project that I was so passionate about, but now that I'm home I have no money coming in. And it was really the point where I thought, right, now I need to have some sort of strategy or think about what it is that I can do, what I want to do, what I'm going to enjoy doing over this time.
Yes, definitely.
Because the last thing any of us wanted was to be stuck in lockdown, feeling anxious or hustling and doing stuff that wasn't really filling us with joy.
Yes.
And so it was really important that I was prioritizing work that joy. I enjoy doing.
Joy and money.
But yeah, that's the ideal.
Exactly, but you're good behind the camera, trained as a video journalist, and in front of the camera, which is a real art in itself, isn't it? So amazing. Now, a number of women I've interviewed have championed the need for multiple income streams, as you do and I try to do, and it really spreads the risk, doesn't it, as a freelancer? But we all need to adapt, and I know that your range of media and directional courses help people pivot and find those multiple income streams like you have, and more happiness. Is there anything that you can do, without giving away your course, obviously, in terms of chasing our happy tips to elevate our ambitions and self-belief like that?
I think following what you enjoy is the best way of securing a role or jobs that bring you passion and that actually make you feel like you're not working. When I was working 9 to 5, I resented so much of that time and so many of those hours. I felt like it was restrictive. It was taking me away from what I really wanted to do. And now I'm quite often, you know, working, and I say working inverted commas, because we need to rephrase it. We need to find a new way of talking about work that is just what we do, something that we love that brings us joy. There needs to be a new phrase for it. I don't know what it's going to be.
Pastime.
But there does. Yeah.
Well, even working from home, I think, it's got a new respect. People used to, you know, I've been working at home for a long time. People used to almost make jokes about people working from home. Whereas now people really respect it. They know it's really hard and really disciplined. And actually, it's harder to earn money working at home.
Nikki, I would advise anyone that if you want to do something, you have to start saying that you do it. And that's positive affirmation, not just for yourself. It signals to everyone else that that is something that you want to do. Because how on earth are people supposed to know your dreams unless you tell them?
That's so true.
It might seem like it's slightly underhand. You might think, I'm an imposter. I'm not actually a writer. I'm not actually a presenter. I'm not actually doing any of these things. I'm not actually an entrepreneur. But if you start describing yourself in that way, a number of things happen. If you do it internally, of course, you start to build that confidence and that identity. But secondary and externally to everyone else, they will start to associate that with you, which means when opportunities arise, you will be in their minds.
That's so true.
For years, I was telling people I was a writer, and I had been working in broadcast for I don't know, a number of years, 6 or 7 years. And I hadn't written anything bar TV scripts, but I knew I wanted to be. I felt like this was who I really am, is that's part of my identity. And I was writing in my spare time and writing little children's poems and books and ideas, but I never did anything in the public domain and never kind of pushed it as a career. But I started telling everyone. I put on my, you know, Twitter that yes. I'm this and this and this. I'm a writer. I put it everywhere. I put it on my website. I'm a writer. Yes. And, you know, 3 years later, look at me now. I'm writing BBC screenplays and, amazing. You know, winning awards. And I'm actually just about to write my first book. So, it's happening. So
good for you. Yes. Live our dreams and, you know, elevate our ambitions, as you say, with that self-belief and that sort of goal mapping, isn't it? I've seen some interviews with you before where you're saying you're competitive about yourself. Do you think it's important for women particularly to be more competitive with themselves, really, and goal setting?
It's funny that although I say I'm competitive, but it really is only with me. I absolutely detest team sports. I am rubbish at everything team sport wise. I just don't have that. Oh, I just don't have the drive that I need to chase that ball or to putt.
It's the pressure on being the one that catches the ball and then not.
I think I failed so often in PE when I was growing up that's potentially, I've got latent issues now from PE.
I think I'm the same. That's exactly what it is.
I think that, you know, But you need to find what it is that drives you, because yes. we're all motivated by different things. And that's once so you true. Start to understand who you are, you can do all sorts of personality tests. I love doing things like the Myers-Briggs or even the kind yes. of color-coded personalities. Find out who you are.
Oh, yes, I've heard of those recently. So did you train in all of this then as a coach with these new skills, or they've just instinctive?
No, it's all just the stuff that I've picked up along the way, especially yeah. When I was an employee, I often had issues with people that I worked with. So Nikki, I've been sacked 20 times, which I realize is not a great top line. I know it's awful.
Why
and I
is
really
that?
Stopped telling people that for many reasons.
Well, you're proud of it.
It's all, that's all a good badge to wear. It is therefore, yes. Why is that? Just
a loose cannon. You just have to that you like to do
with a lot of frogs until you find your career, don't you?
That's true.
I don't know why it's not been the easiest journey. I describe myself as an independent thinker, and I believe that, of course, in the past I've maybe been a bit hedonistic. I loved, you know, especially growing up, I had a wildly hedonistic lifestyle and I had great fun, don't get me wrong. So I had a great time when I was working in lots of bars and restaurants and, you know, seemed to be flying through them. But I think moreover, I've had lots of issues with bosses in the past where I felt like they don't fit the right shape, or I don't fit the shape of the organization. And whether it's, for instance, you know, I've always dedicated time to doing charity work and philanthropy, and I was using up my holidays to either do that work wow. or I was using up to do other work, creative work. And I had not been on holiday for years. And I tried to approach several organizations about how we could work this into their corporate social responsibility. How can I align some of the work that I'm doing externally with that, so that it offers me a little bit more freedom and I can also use the organization and you know, exactly. it's better for the cause. It gains
ahead
momentum.
The
but
yeah.
there wasn't the flexibility. And I found, you know, male bosses in particular I worked with to be very controlling. And I think in some cases that was stemmed from, I think, jealousy and insecurity on their part. I was so free. I was so liberated. I was making my own decisions. I don't take very well to autocratic bosses. I don't work very well with organizational structures in general. I don't believe in hierarchies, and it's not how I tend to work. So I think that's been something that has caused problems, let's just say.
I totally agree with you and all your fabulous values there. And I think, you know, by liberating yourself in that way, you know, you've freed your own thinking and vision and work and everything up, haven't you? Yes. It was obviously a square peg in a round hole, and good for you.
And good comedy. Analogy, I would say, yeah.
I know, exactly. And with comedy, you only started gigging and writing, literally, was it 4 years ago with the Edinburgh Fringe that you broadcast on STV? Which isn't very long, but you've already been Scottish Comedian of the Year, perform with Susan Kalman. I love it when you switch your accents between your heritage and your parents. I just can't believe it. That amazing Scottish accent and that amazing Pakistani accent, isn't it? Are you going to do some of that now?
perform, dance, monkey, dance.
Yes.
I love anything that makes my heart drop through my backside, Nikki. I think I run towards the fear, and anytime I'm offered an opportunity or the chance to do something to challenge myself, whether that's physically or with, you know, a personal speaking challenge, I have to run towards it because I want to run away from it. And I think the natural state for most people is to sort of give into that, those nerves, and give into the fear and to limit themselves. And I was working on a late night chat show as a producer and a reporter, and we had lots of comedians coming in to do the show as guests. And one night someone came in to do the program and he was a little bit nervous, and so I was telling him a few stories and trying to get him to relax before going on air. And he said to me, "Do you want to come and do a 10-minute spot at my Fringe gig, because I'm offering new comedians or other comedians 10 minutes at the beginning of my set or at the beginning of my show?" And it made me feel sick to my stomach, but I instantly said yes. And then my channel director found out that I was doing it, and he said, "Great, we'll send cameras, we'll film it." And I was like, "I'm sorry, but this was supposed to be more of a personal development kind of challenge. This wasn't something that was supposed to be for audiences entertainment." But as it turned out, you know, it was quite good having that pressure.
Amazing.
It's gone very, very well since.
Not everyone does. And I mean, you know, I love talking to on the radio or podcast to a lot of people, but I don't like standing up in front of thousands of people and speaking, which I've done in the past. But you've spoken in front of 50,000 people, haven't you?
There's been, for events and things, I have.
That's a lot of people.
And I remember telling my dad about it because, you know, my father, being from Pakistan, he loved when I was a news presenter, and I would hear him saying on the phone to people in Pakistan, "Mashallah, mera beta newscaster," and he was so proud, and he understood what I was doing as for my job. Wow. But now he doesn't really get it. And so when I speak to my dad about any work I have, the first thing he asks me is, "How much are they paying you?" He just wants to know, how much money are you making?
Yes, exactly.
Are you making money? When I told him about that one, he said, "What do you think this is, bloody Wembley?" 50,000 people, bloody Wembley, eh?
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And you didn't want to sort of abseil or hover above your own body or sort of the stage swallow you up or anything. You were quite comfortable with it
being in your
I think. Really? Well, it's exciting, isn't it? And actually, Nikki, you know, those feelings that we get when we're nervous are very, very close to the same feelings that we get when we're excited. So
that's
we can actually trick our brains very, very easily by when you are nervous and you are thinking, "Oh my goodness, that is a lot of people out there," you can turn it around very quickly and say, I'm so excited. I can't wait to do this. This is great.
Good for you. Goodness me. And you, as you say, you dedicate half your time to philanthropic projects. I mean, incredible, the one that you did. And you're off to Africa when you're allowed to, aren't you? Are you actually going to climb Kilimanjaro?
Yes. So we were supposed to be going next week, actually.
No.
It was supposed to be next week that we left for Kilimanjaro for a children's hospice called CHAZ.
Wow.
And I'd been approached by the organisation about coming on board to do some work with them. And it seemed to be the right fit for me to potentially go out and film this as a documentary for them. Raising funds over the last 18 months has, of course, been very challenging for all organisations. So it felt like the right thing to do to actually try and help them and to find some personal stories to go along with them. But yes, it's now going to take place in June next year.
Oh,
I'm going
really?
Out to CHAZ for 2 weeks to Tanzania to film and climb, fingers crossed.
Really? So you really do take on every adventure, and you'll be in front of and behind the camera, will you? Or you'll take a crew and
we'll do a little bit of both, I think. The problem for me is going to be kit, because obviously I don't want to take too much with me, but then I think in order to make it happen, because I'm doing it as a solo filmmaker as well, which is how I shot the Nepal documentary as well. So I'm concerned about my levels of fitness. I need to make sure that
I
get
the steps up. Then
are there any mountains in London?
Not many. maybe Hampstead?
Well, actually, I'm not far from Hampstead. So I was there yesterday, but I didn't really see the value in doing much climbing there. I feel like the step machine at the gym, that might be the, yes, I might have to get on that, Nikki.
Good for you. My goodness. That's incredible. So good luck with that. You're also an advocate for equality and women's rights and human rights, as you said, and mental health, and speak regularly at some of the biggest International Women's Day events. And even with Nicola Sturgeon once, as First Minister, because you live in Scotland, don't you? Do you still live there now?
I live in London. I live in London. I was dumped and made redundant in the same week about 3 years ago. Fabulous time. Very challenging time. And so I thought I need to move to London and try and, you know, make my career in media continue to grow and to build on that. So no, I'm living down in London now, but I go often regularly go back to Scotland for work. That event with Nicola Sturgeon was wonderful because she was announcing the Gender Pay Gap Action Plan for Scotland on that day. And so I was very privileged to share a stage with her and to help announce that, which is obviously a huge step for Scotland.
Brilliant. Gosh, good for you. And sorry about that with your job and relationship at the same time, and the resilience that you show to come out the other side. Good for you.
So I wasn't resilient. I was a diva. I was honestly like, right, I'm out of here. Don't need you.
And you've recently been acting in Jemima Goldsmith's, former Jemima Khan, What's Love Got to Do with It, with Emma Thompson, Lily James, great cast. And you've been involved with that. It's nothing to do with Tina Turner, so that people don't get confused. Has it been released yet?
I think they're still filming because we were filming some scenes. And, you know, it's always really tricky talking about things before they're released. Because, first of all, you don't know how it's going to be cut. And I'm sure I would love to tell you more once it's actually out, my part and what I was doing. But it was so wonderful working with Emma Thompson. And I was a bit starstruck at the start because I just thought, she's just incredible.
I know, I love her. And, loved it.
And I was absolutely loved that whole experience. But we were filming in, I think, February, March this year. And it was scenes at an Asian wedding, but we were filming in the UK, and we were dressed in, you know, head to toe in Asian clothing, but beautiful. It was thick with snow outside. So it was an experience I will never forget because goodness, I wasn't frozen the entire time.
And in lockdown as well. So you were all COVID tested every day and everything, were you?
Every day. Yeah, every day. And we had to sit alone. So from the other essays.
No,
and
so you couldn't hang out with
Emma.
I think I would have probably broken all lockdown regulations if that had been possible. So thankfully they kept us apart.
That sounds amazing. And Rob Brydon, it's a rom-com, and it talks about the cultural conflicts of love and marriage, doesn't it? And it's not Jemima's first, is it? She's had a number of films that she's produced and directed.
She is incredibly, incredibly talented. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, female written, female produced. And, you know, I think the culture clashes are something that I can really relate to. Given my background, it's something that I often write about as well. So amazing. I had a lot of love and support for this anyway, before I was even considered to be involved, which is
amazing.
Just wonderful.
But your fabulous name, it's your father's from Pakistan and your mum's from Scotland. Is that right?
That's right. A little ginger mammy from Glasgow.
Oh, really?
I often say, it's kind of like East is East, but my dad's much nicer. My mum grew up in Brigton, which is this kind of area of East End of Glasgow. And it sounds a lot like Bridgerton, but it's absolutely, absolutely not anything like classically performed Ariana Grande soundtracks and stuff. It was, you know, knife gangs. You know, she had it was a really, really tough time, I think, for her when growing up in that area. So my dad came from a little village in Pakistan and moved here to the UK 45 years ago. He's more British now than Pakistani, which he won't accept when I tell him that, but he is.
And your surname? So exotic.
Thanks. I mean, I feel like it should sound a bit more exotic, Nikki, than it actually does. Jean-Joua, something.
Oh, yes.
Let's do that. I like it.
Yeah, keep that. So in terms of helping women with our podcast, the Influential Women podcast, we chat to women about their influences, but also any adversity or setback they've overcome. And I know there's not just one adversity or challenge. And you've talked about your work, you know, in terms of 20 times there. But were there any other things that you wanted to talk about to help people? Because by hearing other people's stories, it helps us with our own lives and know that we can find that strength.
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up being mixed race, especially in Glasgow at the time in the 80s, it wasn't always easy, I think, for me to understand and to control my identity or to understand my identity. I felt completely torn between two different worlds. And my father, especially, I think, really struggled with me in particular growing up because, you know, there were all these freedoms being afforded to other girls of my age that he couldn't see the how I would be, you know, his daughter would be allowed to do these things. And the women in Pakistan, the young girls in Pakistan, you know, his image of Pakistan is what it was 45 years ago. And I think there's this very kind of interesting phenomenon that happens when you do leave a country that your image or your memory is kind of immortalized then and you don't progress. And his image of Pakistan has not progressed. So now when he goes back and when he speaks to people, he's floored, you know, that how much things have changed and how much more liberal it is, what women are wearing, yes, what women are doing. And, you know, it's the freedoms that are being afforded everywhere. He is very much stuck in the past, my dad. And that was something that we argued about a lot when I was growing up. But I think also to communicate my own identity to other people, children at school just didn't always understand, you know, why I was eating the things I ate, why, you know, I did the things I did, why I went to Arabic school after classes, why I was having to wear a headscarf, why I went, you know, I did when I was younger, and why, you know, what Eid was. I felt very different. So I would go from, you know, Easter service at school straight to the mosque. I was fully incorporated into what life was growing up here, into Western culture and traditions. You know, we celebrated Christmas. We still celebrate Christmas, yes, but we also celebrate Eid. And it was really important for them to maintain that. My mum had converted to Islam when she married my dad. And that's something that she still practices and they all practice. What happens, I think, when you grow up feeling like you don't fit in is that it fuels imposter syndrome. And that's something that I've really, really tackled and I've been challenged by throughout my life. And it's still something I have to very much stay on top of, that feeling of you don't belong here. Someone's going to catch you out and tell you you're not meant to be here. You know, that feeling of maybe not being good enough and having to work so much harder than everyone else. And this is why I'm so passionate about diversity and equality and the issues there, because I think the fact is that there are lots of people based on their background, ethnicity, gender. There's so many reasons why some people will have to work so much harder than most to get to where they've got to. And that needs to be acknowledged. Those people need to be supported and to be helped along in their journey, which is why we have so many more sort of positive campaigns to help increase diversity in so many different industries now.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, that must have been really hard. And I think you help a lot of women now with your work in terms of imposter syndrome and some of your speeches and online, don't you, in terms of knowing how other people feel. And a lot of women feel they're not good enough still. To show that acceptance and to help children, I think, is amazing. And thank you for sharing that, you know, because that will help so many other people and how they feel.
It's been helping me. Just on that note, though, it really does help me to keep a list of my achievements. And throughout the year, every year I've been doing this for the last sort of 3 or 4 years, where when I achieve something, when I win something, when I just do something I'm proud of, I write it in a note section of my phone. And anytime I'm thinking, oh, I'm not really doing that well, or I don't know if I can do this, I get asked to do a speech or get asked to go somewhere or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I go back into that list and I read it and I go, that woman on that page that I'm reading about right now, she can do this.
And you've only got to look at your website and those awards, you think you can certainly do it and be such an influential woman to inspire so many other women and men, actually, because men love listening. They want to know why we're influential and they will hear and see all the things you've done. And
they'll learn something, right?
That's what it's about, learning and knowing whatever you've been through and however, whatever you've faced in your life, that you can come back from it with the strength and resilience that you are and you have. So you're pretty fearless, and that's amazing. And thank you for sharing that. Because a lot of people are struggling right now, and, you know, they'll look to you with positivity and your success. Is there anything you'd say to them, to other people that are really struggling right now?
I mean, the one sort of mantra that I have, it was something I was told, or it came up when I was doing an event with NatWest, and I was interviewing a board of entrepreneurs, and one of them said to me, would you take the voice in your head to dinner? And it took a few moments to percolate, because I was thinking, you know, what does it really mean? And when I thought about it, I realized that the people I would take out for dinner and say, I'm taking you for dinner, are the people who give me love in my life, the people who inspire me and are positive about me and what I do. And when I need help, they tell me I can do it. They give me support. And sometimes the voice that we have in our own heads is quite negative. And you have to really ask yourself, are you being a good ally? Are you being a good friend to yourself? Because if you're not, then you need to change what's going on inside. So how you need to become really, really aware of your patterns of what that voice is telling you. And you can choose again.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Leave them at home and go out to dinner with somebody else.
There's an excellent book called Into the Magic Shop, and it's written by a neurosurgeon. And he talks about discovering meditation as a young boy and how that led him on his journey to becoming a very, very successful surgeon living out in Beverly Hills. He did very, very well. And what he describes is, you know, often when we hear that voice in our heads, whether it's saying something negative about ourselves, about someone else, a lot of people assume that that voice is us. That's, oh my gosh, I'm thinking this. Yes, and it's not you. You're the one that's listening to that voice. So that voice is coming from somewhere else. And I think when you become aware of that space between the voices, there are, you know, the voice in your head, you can then change it. You can shout back at it.
You're not your thoughts. And Jay Shetty, you know, former monk, talked about that sort of thing as well, in terms of, I think, in the stillness that we've all had in lockdown, and the quiet times, we have had to live with our own thoughts more, and that self-development and self-awareness and that journey, it's really challenged everyone, hasn't it? But we've learned a lot as well about ourselves. And I love your mantra behind you, dream big, everything is possible. Is that what you say? You change that every day, don't you?
Every week, not every day. Oh my gosh. Just depending on what I think I might need, I'll switch up.
I love that. So which strong women or men have inspired you? Who do you look up to then?
I mean, I know that this is a classic when people say this, but my mum is the biggest influence in my life. I've never met anyone like her, and I continue to be impressed by her as a person. The way that she can speak to anyone, I find really impressive. She is a very calm force. She is the least judgmental person I have ever met in my life. She's so zen and so Buddha, but she would never describe herself that way. She's proper East End of Glasgow. But she just,
she's seen it all.
She doesn't she's not judgmental. I mean, I think that she would be, and I hear from my sister-in-law that she is the best mother-in-law around, because
she's so kind
and supportive.
And she'll hear this, won't she? Hopefully she'll listen to this and hear.
Yeah, I've got a favor really to ask her, so I'm hoping that this is gonna
Yes, Mom, please listen to this about how much I love you. How lovely is that? And you've interviewed so many people yourself as an incredible broadcaster. You've talked to Cara Delevingne and Sir Richard Branson. You know, who's your favourite out of all your people?
Oh my gosh, I think it's hard to choose a favourite, because I think whatever's happening now is my favourite. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course.
You know, I don't like to sort of live in the past too much, as in I appreciate all these wonderful experiences. I would say the person that stands out the most, just because when I met her, I was taken aback by just how kind and generous she was, and how considerate and thoughtful, and I hadn't expected her behavior. So before I tell you who she was, she walked into the studio, and as she was going into the studio, our gallery, so I was working in television at the time, our gallery door was open, and she could see into the technical directors and the producers. And so she knocked on the door and said, can I come in? And she walked in and said hello to everyone and introduced herself, which everyone was like, we know who you are. But she introduced herself, shook their hands, and was just and said how happy she was to be with us. And she sat down and gave the most elegant interview. And I love her so much. So Joanna Lumley is one of my all-time favorite people, because amazing. I just think she's so classy in how she is, her mentality and her approach, her kindness, how she deals with people. And it's Joanna Lumley, darling. Of course, darling. Of course.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Of course. Why wouldn't you like Joanna Lumley, darling? I'm sorry, that's a terrible impression, but I just love
brilliant.
Her.
No, that's fabulous. Joanna
Lumley. Oh, I love her as well. And how amazing that she would come in and be that humble. And I think that's something she is with all of her documentaries.
And it's a small step that can go such a long way to just make people feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't take much to be kind. And it took her, you know, all of 20 seconds to walk
that's
in and say
so
hello.
True.
And for her, that was really important.
How lovely. Amazing. So hobbies, if you ever get any time off. I know comedy and cookery on TV, are they your passions? What are your passions?
I think I had to ask myself, last year I had an executive coach actually who came on board to work with me when I found out I was joining NatWest on their quality advisory council, and I was keen to kind of hone those skills and those business, very specific business skills for working together. And he asked me what my purpose was, and I didn't quite know how to answer it. And I feel that for me, I'm trying to turn and convert my work into, or my hobbies into, great fee-paying work, because at the moment I have one area where I work that is my philanthropy, and often the work that I do there is creative. It's filmmaking, it's acting, it's presenting. It's, I will offer to do things that tap into my skill set that still, you know, bring me joy. But it's an area, let's just say, over here to the left. And then I've got work that I consider right in front of me, which is the fee paying work, and I try to work with big brands, big organizations, and to make much higher margins so that I can afford myself the time to work on the charity stuff, but I can also afford myself the time to work on creative projects. And the creative projects that I love are, I have a ton of ideas, Nikki, for stories. I love story.
From a child,
I loved making up stories about people's lives. I was quite restricted in where I was allowed to go and what I was allowed to do growing up. My father was very careful. He didn't want us roaming the streets as children and just hanging out with friends. So I didn't really have a lot of friendships when I was very, very young. I was a bit of a loner, and I appreciate that about myself now, because I do still enjoy spending a lot of time by myself. And when I am alone, I write, I create, I make up stories. And now I've found a way of transforming them into a platform or into a tangible idea that I can then use to feed back into the other lines of work that I do.
Exactly.
So the idea now is to really try and transform some of that into, great fee paying work. And I'm getting there, which is really exciting.
Fantastic. Good for you. Especially in this climate when everyone's cutting back.
Good for you.
But I love cooking. I do love cooking. You did bring up cooking. And I was brought up in a house where fresh food was prepared daily. And that's something that, you know, I still try to do every day, even though I'm just cooking for one usually. But I love spoiling myself and making an effort and having nice produce to cook with. So I love, love, love cooking. And I was creating recipes for a while and doing a lot of food writing with magazines and newspapers. So I turn everything that I enjoy doing into something that's either going to help me promotionally, not through intention, just by accident.
Yes. And being so positive and passionate. And that is your purpose, isn't it? You know, you're driven, which is brilliant. Now, mantras, you touched on one of them, but you had some funny ones that you emailed me, including a very rude one. But we want to share that. Can you remember what that was?
Yeah, I can. It's something I tell myself if I start to procrastinate or put things off or around, you know the times when the tins in your cupboard are all organized and you've done all your washing and all the cleaning and everything's perfect, and you go, oh, this is because I'm avoiding doing a job that it's not lighting me up. I say JFDI, which is just fucking do it. Just fucking do it.
It's
just
true.
Get on with it. We spend so much time thinking about things that we don't actually just get them done. And
yeah,
Nikki,
so
the best thing I ever did was start to action. But this was, you know, even when I was previously in a very difficult relationship, And when it ended, I had really bad anxiety. I had really bad depression. I really went through quite a difficult time. And the only thing that could keep me going was this idea of putting one foot in front of the other and trying to just make things happen. And, you know, sometimes I'm very grateful that I am that way, because often when we are feeling like that, we just want to stay in bed. Mm. We don't want to get up. We don't want to do anything. And I had a real fear at that time that my life was going to implode and that I was just, yeah, that was that I'd achieved everything that I was going to achieve. And there was just this huge voice inside me screaming at me, being like, no, there is no way. No, this is it for you. You have to keep doing this. Yes. And sometimes that just fucking do it is, you know, if you see a competition and this is, they're really just there to give me a deadline to work towards, especially if it's something creative. Get yourself a deadline. You've got something to work towards, but it helps you make something. It helps you produce something from an idea, which is wonderful. Yes. But also if you, it gives you content then. So you can post about it on LinkedIn. You can say, I've just entered this. Think about like how you're marketing yourself. And it was ticking so many boxes. So that's why I just thought, you know, when you see competitions, don't stick it in the diary and say, oh, I'll plan. Just fucking do it. Just get it done. Half an hour applying for it. And then you don't need to think about it.
Huge sense of achievement as well, isn't it? I've done it. Oh, brilliant. Which is what we definitely need. So what's your next goal? Goodness me, you've got so many things happening.
Well, there's two very big things for me with writing that's happening at the moment. I was signed to an incredible literary agent, Roxana Yasmin, and wow. She is helping me with my first book, which
So you are actually doing that as well. You're just
chapters. Yeah, I've written two chapters. We're working on the proposal and we're going to start submitting it to publishers very soon, which would be brilliant. Very exciting. It's about having a multi-hyphen career.
Ooh,
it's a non-fiction exciting. And it's about my career, but it's a sort of anecdote-driven, funny business book rather than just a career.
That sounds brilliant. Multi-hyphen, so the multi-dimensional things in your life and bringing them all together. How lovely that you're working through it with your agent as well, direction along the way. So it's not sort of write the book and then find an agent, it's find the agent and then go in the right direction.
Well, you know, I have so many other projects that I'm working on creatively at the moment. There's no point in writing the full book and looking for a publisher. I think that depending on the publisher, you know, you get notes back and I will, you know, work towards those for how I build the other chapters. I'm really appreciating the advice on it, because I had initially approached about a fiction, and so it's a fiction novel. And so it's great that we've kind of developed this. We had a wonderful conversation. It was in lockdown. We met in a graveyard. I know that sounds totally bonkers.
Really?
But we sat on a picnic blanket two meters away from each other, and because there was nowhere else to meet.
Incredible.
And we had this lovely conversation about ideas. And this is what we're...
Yes, and it was somewhere secret and private as well. Gosh, yeah. You can put that in the book as well. My goodness. You've got a sitcom as well.
So I have a sitcom and it's under option, and it has just received some funding for a sizzle. So I am writing the sizzle right now, and they've asked me to play the lead, which is great.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I'm so pleased for you. Everything's just going exactly how it was meant to do. It's just going amazingly for you.
Thank you. I would like to write a film next, and I would like to go out to Hollywood and produce it and win Oscars and whatnot. Why not? Let's do all that.
Why not? Just effing do it, girl. And climb Kilimanjaro. So that's next year sorted. Gosh, your name, we will follow your dreams and goals, and are so inspired and influenced by everything that you're doing in your life and have done.
Nikki, I hope that sharing this does maybe help someone in some way, because, you know, otherwise it feels quite self-indulgent to just come in and talk about me. But thank you for the opportunity to have a chat.
No, thank you. And it definitely has. And, you know, what you've been through and your resilience and determination to do what you want to do and find success and an amazing, happy, you know, life with it. It is what everyone aspires to. So that will give people hope. And, you know, you haven't had it plain sailing. You've been through stuff and you've come out the other side and thrived and survived. So lastly, any message that you would give to people out there to help them uplift their mindset, their day, or even their life with another mantra?
So the one that has helped me the most in life, and the one I continue to think of daily, is to turn your ideas into something tangible, because there's no point in having these ideas and doing nothing with them in life. You have to make things happen. So whatever it is that you're thinking of, whatever it is that you're dreaming of doing, just action it, make something happen. And, you know, good things do come once you start to create.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. That was so lovely. One incredibly talented, busy lady. Thank you so much, Zara, for sharing your incredible multi-dimensional life. Good luck with your new book, your sitcom, Hollywood and Kilimanjaro and future endeavours. Thanks for uplifting us today. This Influential Women's podcast is founded, hosted and exec produced by Nikki Bannerman, with editing from our new assistant producer, Dulcie Godfrey, with fond thanks to our team of previous producers, including Safran Mirza and Juliet Nichols. Please direct message me and all of us to share your views on Influential Pod on Twitter or Influential_Women_podcast on Instagram. Please share the podcast with others to join our tribe of influential women kicking ass to adversity